Hello, this is Deborah Harper, President of Psych Journey. Welcome to the Psych Journey Podcast, www.psychjourneypodcast.com. A recent study showed that when doctors tell heart patients they will die if they don't change their habits, only 1 in 7 will be able to follow through successfully. Desire and motivation aren't enough, even when it's literally a matter of life or death. The ability to change remains maddeningly elusive. Given that the status quo is so potent, how can we change ourselves and our organizations? Our guest, Dr. Lisa Leahy, co-author of Immunity to Change, How to Overcome and Unlock the Potential in Yourself and Your Organization, co-written by Dr. Robert Kagan and published by Harvard Business Press, will help us understand why change is so hard and will offer us innovative, practical insight to overcome the internal and external obstacles and to meet the challenge of change. Dr. Lisa Leahy is the co-founder and principal of Minds at Work. She and her partner, Robert Kagan, have helped individuals and organizations achieve their goals for over 30 years, co-authors of How the Way We Talk Can Change the Way We Work and Immunity to Change. They join Warren Bennis, Edgar Schwinn, and Peter Senge as recipients of the Gisselium Prize for Contributions to Organizational Leadership. She is also the Associate Director of the Change Leadership Group at the Harvard University Graduate School of Education. She is the lead author of the widely used method of assessing the developmental complexity of an individual's way of making meaning, the Guide to the Subject-Object Interview, and co-author of Change Leadership, A Practical Guide to Improving Our Schools. Visit her website, www.mindsatwork.com. Welcome, Dr. Leahy.
Hi there, Deborah.
Well, it is such an important book, and I thought just really delved into such depth and was honest about some of the difficulties. I mean, I find just visualize doesn't really work.
Yes, we try to communicate both the challenge of it, but the possibility and inevitable possibility, reality that it can happen when you kind of get your arms around what's the kind of change we're trying to make when sometimes we feel like we're knocking our head against a wall. And that's usually a pretty good signal that we're up against a kind of change that is an adaptive change for us. It's not something that is going to be solved easily, and we need different kinds of approaches than we've tended to use in order to really succeed with those kind of goals. And that's what we tried to do in the book, is communicate what do those processes look like.
Well, I think that's, I mean, your book is extremely well written and very insightful and well researched, and I think also very empowering in the sense, I think I certainly have, I think a lot of people fall in the trap of just try harder and try harder. Okay, now it's time to beat myself up for family.
Yes. I think that's right, and I think that's one of the reasons why so many of us, if we're really honest, feel like I'm not going to really change anyway, or this person I'm working with is never going to change. Why bother? Why give them feedback? These sorts of things, because I think we all have had experiences, myself included, where, you know, we have tried and we've tried harder and it still hasn't made a difference. And we began to really understand, why is it that for some people, some of these goals seem like, well, they're able to reach them, and other people, it really is the struggle. It is the trying harder and it doesn't work. And this whole idea of immune system is, to our minds, one of the linchpins to helping somebody to be in a more powerful relationship to their change aspiration, because they understand for the first time what is it that's really getting in their way and how can they get out of their own way.
Yes, if you could speak a little about the metaphor of, for the title of your book, because when I read it, I thought, and then read your explanation, that was really kind of an aha moment for me. It made a lot of sense. Immunity to change. Why did you select that for the title?
Well, one thing we wanted to communicate is that immunities to change, like our biological immunity to change, are perfectly natural. It's part of being a human being, and none of us should feel like, oh, I have an immunity to change, that's bad. It's a perfectly natural thing. And in our bodies, you know, our immune systems do an excellent job most of the time taking very good care of us. Yet an immune system is a beautiful thing. It protects us. But we also do know that occasionally an immune system in our bodies does make a mistake, and that is when it rejects, for example, new material, something that the body actually needs in order to heal itself or to thrive. And in that case, the immune system, it's still doing its job of trying to protect us, but it is actually in the process putting us at serious risk. And the parallel in our psychological world is that our immunity to change is doing a very good job of helping us to stay safe. But the problem there is that inevitably it's keeping us from being able to achieve certain kinds of goals, aspirations we have for ourselves that really outstrip our current capacity. And that's when our immune system gets us into trouble.
Yeah, I think everyone would agree that not only at the uncertainty of the times, but that change is constant and the rate of change is so rapid now that, using your metaphor again of the immune system, we really have to be able to get pretty specific on what to stay with, what to let in, what to respond to.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. It is the relentless forces.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you could tell us a little bit of your research for the book, because that is quite impressive. And I do.
Yes. Yeah, so I think there's two kinds of researches that I would describe. One is that after we wrote the book, our first book on this topic, How the Way We Talk Can Change the Way We Work, we were collecting a lot of data from people around the extent to which the map they ended up developing, and by map I mean that's the process that we use to help someone to see their immune system, we would ask them, so how powerful is your map to you?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a really interesting range. For some people it was like, wow, this is the coolest thing since, you know, sliced bread. I am seeing something I have never seen before. This is very powerful. People said things like, wow, you know, in 2 hours I see something and understand it better than I did after 15 years in therapy, that kind of comment.
Mm-hmm.
But then there were also people who were like, I have no idea what it is that we were doing here and how the person sitting next to me had such a powerful experience. I feel like I missed what was going on. So, so we intentionally set out to do research specifically on how can we improve the quality of the process that we took people through to help them to develop a powerful diagnostic for themselves. And we tried several different things, and we would keep collecting the data about, okay, now how is this going and how is it? And we eventually came to understand that part of what we needed to do to increase the experience of people having good experiences was we had to be much more explicit about what quality was at every single step of the way. And so when people start, for example, by identifying a goal, a change goal they have, well, we didn't realize this up front, but we realized through all of our efforts in the data collection that what you put in your first column in terms of your improvement goal really is very critical in terms of whether the whole thing is going to have any real power for you, because if you don't put something in there that really is genuinely important to you, something that you care deeply about, something that feels to you has been on your mind, you've maybe even tried to make progress on this before and you've failed. If you don't have something that's really meaningful, it doesn't matter what else happens in the exercise. The whole thing is going to be like, ah, so what?
Mm-hmm.
So it's that sort of thing that I think we did a much better job at figuring out how to give people the opportunity to see their powerful immune system. So that's one kind of research we did. Alongside that, we realized that having a powerful picture of your own internal immune system is very high value, but we also were seeing that it wasn't itself leading people to make changes, and of course that's not a big surprise at a certain level. So what we decided to do was focus a lot of our attention on, could we create a structure as in a kind of process that people could pursue after they had their MAP developed, where they could do the work of actually overturning their immune system. And we did lots of pilots, several pilots, where we tried different ways of helping to support people in all different kinds of ways. And what we came to understand is that very important right out of the box is the importance of momentum, and that if people have a powerful insight or diagnostic picture of their own immune system, if you don't do something very quickly with it, it tends to recede for the majority of people. So we figured out how to build a structure that would help people to actually go with the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And then we discovered needed a kind of structure to stay in the sweet spot of the kind of work that had to be done to overturn their immune system, because so much of us, as we were saying when we began this conversation, so many of us work just harder at doing the thing we think we should be doing, as if we think the harder work is going to get us there. And we realized people actually needed to learn a different way of approaching how they even could do this change work. And originally we thought if they understood the concept of an immune system, where, you know, you've got one foot that's on the gas in your change goal aspiration, but you've got another foot simultaneously that is on the brake, and that's your competing commitment. We thought if people understood the basic concept, they would really understand how to go about the work of overturning their immune system. And everything that we learned from letting people go at it themselves was that there are always going to be a few people who can do it, but most people really needed much more structure, and with many more guideposts around what was going to be like a quality way of responding to a given exercise or opportunity.
Well, that's great. And one of the things that you used, you have some wonderful case studies or examples in your book that bring it down to something very concrete we can all relate to. And one of them was the famous New Year's resolution. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to go to the gym. It's like, you know, don't ask me about that in February.
Yeah.
Could you give us one of the concrete examples of your book from that, of why is it so difficult to make this happen?
Yes. Well, let's turn to what is the – this isn't really one of the – we don't expand on this particular case in the book, but it's in the book, and it's in there because it is probably the most popular New Year's resolution certainly in the United States, where we suffer as a group of people with weight. So, okay, a lot of people do make a commitment to lose weight for their, for the third, fourth year in a row. Here we are. I'm committed to losing weight. Okay, so what the exercise asks people to do is, as a next step, to take stock of what are the things that they are doing themselves that work against that goal. And, you know, this is a basic form of let's just be honest and fess up to what are the things we're doing that are the reason why I'm not losing weight. Okay, so I'm doing things like I eat too much. I eat when I'm not even hungry. I eat food that has too much fat. I'm not watching the quality of the food that I eat. I eat food with too much carbohydrate. Things like this that, you know, at a knowledge level, okay, we're being honest and we know we're not eating the right foods. Okay, so far, you know, everybody feels like, yep, okay, I know that. Now, our basic impulse, once we've identified the things that we're doing that are working against our goal to lose weight, is we basically do a New Year's resolution again, and we promise ourselves that starting tomorrow, we are going to turn over a new leaf.
Famous tomorrow.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like we keep making these New Year's resolutions within our New Year's resolutions and say, okay, I was a bad girl today. I ate too much. Or I knew I shouldn't have had that that whole piece of, you know, that chocolate cake. And so I'm going to starve myself the next, 12 hours, whatever. But we think that the action is at turning over a new leaf around the behaviors. And that's where the whole immunity idea takes a very different turn, which it says these behaviors that you've just honestly named actually are serving a very important purpose.
Mm-hmm.
They happen to be getting in the way of your effort to lose weight, but if you don't understand what those behaviors are doing and how brilliant they are at serving some other purpose, you're never going to be able to change those behaviors. So that's when we ask people in the exercise to imagine doing the opposite of whatever you've just named. Imagine that you are not eating all the time, that you are, like, you know, creating portions for yourself. Imagine that you just have a couple of forkfuls of that chocolate cake, and then what worries or fears come up?
Mm-hmm.
And that starts taking us into the landscape of what is going on in the inners of the person that are basically about a set of fears they have of who they will be if they start acting in this different way. Depending on who the person is, they will say different kinds of things. But, you know, so just to give you a few examples, somebody might say, oh, my worry is that I'm going to become like a crazy person and over-disciplined and, like, it won't be any fun anymore. Another person might say, well, you know, basically I feel like it will be, like, boring in a way. I'll
mm-hmm.
feel bored in a certain way. You know, somebody else might feel, and this actually came out of a real example of somebody who we had done this work with, that their worry was that they would actually lose weight and become a sexual object to people.
Mm-hmm.
And that this was a thing that she just never wanted to have happen. So that's where the immune system starts operating, where we've got these fears, these anxieties, these worries. And what we do as a next step is to say, okay, these fears, worries, and so on, they're not just these kind of, we don't just have a passive relationship to these worries and fears. There's a part of us that is actively expending energy to make sure these things that we're worried about happening don't ever occur. We have active commitment. So like that first person, we could say that first person is actively committed to not experiencing himself as being so disciplined, or on the flip side, actively committed to just being a person who just lives freely and just, you know, has all the flexibility that feels to them like that's where their nourishment comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Or for this last example, you know, this person having a commitment to never being seen or related to as a sexual object. You know, a commitment to not feeling overwhelmed or enraged by being seen that way. So it's when we get to this, I'm saying column because that's the way the exercise is just physically laid out. By the time you get to this third column here, now we're getting to what is really the source of the problem here, which is the immune system is keeping us safe from the things we are worried about happening. And if we don't get to that level, we're not going to, or understand that that's really what's happening, we're not going to be able to change our behaviors.
Well, that makes perfect sense to me, and I think very empowering to people, and probably a lot of listeners are going, gosh, I finally get it now, because we do seem to often be working across purposes to ourselves.
Yes, and often without any awareness that we're doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes good sense that we want to be taking care of ourselves. And, you know, our stand towards this immune system is the third column, that there is nothing to be ashamed of here, that, you know, if we didn't really believe, if we did not see ourselves as important and worthy of our own respect, we wouldn't need to protect ourselves in these
mm-hmm.
ways. But we do, and it's going on automatically at a very, you know, constant channel for every single one of us around something.
Now, what role does anxiety play in our self-sabotage when we attempt to change a habit or behavior?
So this, the like in walking through this example here, that third column, when I ask the question of what's the worry or fear that comes up for you as you imagine changing your behaviors so that they're more aligned with your goal, that takes us into really what's the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that our whole the anxiety actually is the source of our immune system, and it is going to keep us then, it activates our immune system, and as being part of our immune system, it just there to keep protecting us from bad things happening to us. So the role that it plays in self-sabotage is it will always, to the extent it's running us and we're not aware of our anxiety, it will keep us from being able to make any headway on our important goals or aspirations, because we unwittingly are serving the master of keeping us to feeling less anxious.
And you talk about that people can be anxious, but if you ask them, are you anxious, they're not even aware of it. Can we even hide our own feelings that much from ourselves?
Well, this kind of anxiety, we most of the time are not aware of. There's a, you know, just our regular kind of anxiety, like, okay, I've got to get up and give a performance, or, you know, I've got a very important meeting where I've got to be able to be on my, you know, talk on my feet and so on. I can feel naturally anxious about being in the situation where I'm going to really have to be in top form. And we know from the psychological literature that a certain amount of that kind of anxiety actually is very productive for our performance. It can enhance our performance. We also know too much of that kind of anxiety can lead our performance to plummet. But that's really not even so much the kind of anxiety that's going on in an immune system, where so much of it is really invisible to us because we are so automatically wanting to keep the things we're worried about from happening. We are very, very skillful at creating the world that these things, so that these things actually don't happen. So we don't have to experience that level of like conscious anxiety where all of a sudden, oh my gosh, we see we've put ourselves in a risky situation, and so we feel that kind of anxiety. Do you get what I mean about it's
Oh yeah, I do. I think we all do. And one of the things that's very fascinating about your metaphor of the immune system is we've been talking primarily through this interview about individuals, but you also apply this to organizations. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So we apply this to organizations. So the whole idea of having an immune system where there is a part of a self that is moving in one direction and wants to make a certain change happen. And then there's another part that is unwittingly moving in the opposite direction, the gas pedal and the brake. That very same dynamic operates at all kinds of other levels, a team level, a group level, a collective level, even an organization. And the work that we've done has helped us to see that collectively people can have a shared aspiration to, for example, as a group of people in the, I do a lot of my work in the field of education, as a group of principals, for example, in, say, elementary school, we are committed to leading our schools in ways that allow all of our kids in the district to reach grade level reading levels at, say, fourth grade. And we are really committed to leading in these ways. And as a group, we are committed to being a resource to one another so that we can keep doing this very hard work. And what you end up finding when you give a group like that the opportunity to look at its own functioning is they start realizing there are things that as a group they are doing that work against their collective aspiration to really serve all their schools and their kids in these ways. And so they start saying things like, well, you know what, we don't even really look carefully at all the data that we're getting about what's happening in the schools. We don't look at what's happening in each of our classrooms. We don't actually talk with our teachers about what they believe they need in order to be making progress with students. And we realize there's all kinds of things we're not doing. But it doesn't mean we're not committed to that goal. We are committed. And then what they start realizing as a collective group is they don't really know how to do this work. And so they've got a collective commitment to not discovering that they don't know what on earth they're doing. They have never been asked to do this work before. It's natural that they don't know how to do it, but that's what their immune system is telling them. Uh-oh, we need to protect ourselves from discovering that we actually don't know how to raise the reading scores in our schools. And so they are making then a set of assumptions that they have to know out of the box how to do this in order to be effective, rather than they could have a different mental model, which could be something like, okay, we're all in this together. None of us have ever had to do this before. Nobody has ever been asked to do this before. As a group, let's see if we can figure out, knowing we're going to be making lots of mistakes on the way, how to do this. That would be like a very alternative model for them to hold. But because as a collective, they are not bringing to the level of explicit discourse the immunity that is naturally going on, they don't realize that there's a part of the group that is working against their very intention to be more productive.
Now, you've seen the example you just did of the school principals of the elementary school who want to improve the reading levels. You talk about the three necessary ingredients to unlock potential. What would be in that situation?
Well, so one of the first ingredients is that you have to have a motivation to change. And so if you stay with this example in the group, that collection of principals really needs to feel like the reading our kids' capacities to read is really critical, mm-hmm. and our role in helping that happen is really critical. We are absolutely motivated to making that happen, and they have to feel like this really does matter. So that would be the first ingredient. And the second ingredient actually is about when you're trying to over, so actually that has a lot to do with why that should even be an aspiration for them to begin with. When we talked before about doing the mapping of an immune system, it's important to have a very high quality goal. And I would say, okay, this is the beginning of a high quality goal is because it's something you'd be motivated to try to reach, so that when you're in the work of trying to overturn that immune system, you still need to have that motivation, and you need to have that motivation in a way that says, we as a group are really still motivated to do this, even though we don't exactly know how to do it. Then the second ingredient is something that we call having head and heart, where when you are looking to overturn an immunity, the way that that happens is that we begin to start crafting small and safe, modest tests of these big assumptions that we hold that are basically leading our immune system to be in place. And so in their particular case, let's say they had an assumption that as leaders, we need to know the answer for how to do this before we can do anything. And, an embedded assumption there is that we can't be learners in the process and still be making progress. Mm-hmm. So let's say they take that assumption, and what they're going to do is start testing in very small ways, can we be learners here? So let's say that one of the things that they decide they're going to do as a test is to say, we're going to actually see if we can take a look at the data that exists across our schools and see whether we can, with the help of somebody, we can bring somebody in to help us do this, but can we feel like competent in terms of our own beginning to understand how to even look at the data, and that when they run this test of seeing whether they can start experiencing themselves as having a competent relationship to understanding data, they aren't doing that just for the purpose of getting more competent in understanding the data, though that's part of what we want to have happening, but what they're also doing, most importantly, is testing their assumption of what it is to be a learner. Can they be learners? And so what we want them to be doing is tuning into their heart. Their heart meaning, how does it feel to be this learner? Do you feel like you can stay in the work of not knowing when you don't know and still feel like you could actually get to the next place there where, okay, I lived with that uncertainty and actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And So this is what we mean by head and heart, that in order to really make the change, we need to run these sorts of tests that lead us inevitably to tune into how we feel about doing things differently. Because a lot of our mindsets and kind of assumptions about how things, how we can handle things, how much we can handle, and so on, has to do with our own premature conclusions most of the time about our emotional capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second ingredient. And actually, I've begun to talk to the third ingredient already, which is what we call hand. And what we mean by that is that you actually have to be in the work of new behaviors where you are engaging in new steps, taking new actions that run contrary to your big assumption, and you're engaging in those behaviors so that you can discover what do they tell you about your big assumption. So it is all about taking new behaviors in a very mindful way that test our big assumption, and then tuning into how do I feel and how do I understand what happened in that situation. And when you put those two pieces together along with my motivation to keep learning, you have what are the three essential ingredients.
Well, that was fascinating. Thank you for sharing that with us. Now, you have something that you call an immunity map as a tool in the book. And can you give the listeners a brief overview of how they would use this map, either individually or in their organization?
Yes. So in the earlier example that I gave about losing weight, I was walking through what is a version of a quote-unquote immunity map. And
mm-hmm.
I know this is a little bit of an odd word, but what the map is, when you originally take a look at what the map is, it's four blank columns. And each of the columns is devoted to a step in the process that allows you to see your immune system. And the times I would encourage people to use an immune or to try to do an immunity mapping process are when you are wanting to make some sort of a change for yourself personally or in your group, and a change that you know is going to be challenging to you personally or to the group, and not because of some condition out there in the world, that it's more because you know there's something like internally, even though you don't really know what it is. You
mm-hmm.
think it's about your willpower. You think it's about, gee, I just don't know how to do it, or I don't know how to work hard enough. But you think you have something to do with why you're not making progress. Those are perfect kinds of goals to be using this immunity map for. Goals that you've tried to reach before and you haven't been able to. You've been foiled. So it could be things like, I want to learn to be a better delegator. I want to learn to be a better listener. I want to learn to be more collaborative. And actually, that's a good example of often what happens in teams, where teams come up with goals of, we have got to work more collaboratively together.
Mm-hmm.
We're way too siloed. Okay, so those are good examples of goals that you have a goal that feels to you like it's a stretch goal, and you know as a group or an individual you've got something to do with why you're not making progress. And then what the rest of the map does is it walks you through, and the book, we hope, does a really good job of walking you through with a set of prompts, questions that help you to know what does the next step, where does the next step take me? Okay, so if you've got that in your first column, the next step is, what are you, either individually or as a group, doing that work against that? And then the third step is really the heart of the exercise at identifying your immune system. What is the hidden competing commitment? And then it's a set of directions for how to, what are the questions you need to ask yourself to identify what that is? And then the fourth column is there to identify what is the big assumption, or assumptions mostly is what it is, that I personally am making or as a group we're making that are sustaining our immune system. And once we've got that whole thing pulled together, what hopefully people see in those first three columns is, pardon my French, but why we're screwed,
mm-hmm.
why we're actually not going to make any progress here. And what they hopefully see is, though, in the fourth column, we see that the lever that we can use in order to disrupt that immune system is actually the big assumption, because that's the thing we have been taking to be the truth about ourselves, about how other people react to us, and so on, that has basically been guiding us all these years. And if we can keep that explicit and develop these kinds of tests that I was just talking with you about, we're going to be in a position where we can learn how completely accurate is that big assumption that we take to be so 100% true. And that's where the real learning action happens.
Well, I recommend your book very highly. Are there any questions I have not asked you that you would like to address?
I guess the basic thing that I would want to be encouraging people to think about is that, or I guess it's a different way to think about why we have been so successful in helping people to change using the immunity process, which is because we think we have figured out how to help people identify really what is the problem they're trying to solve through the immunity mapping process, and that these are adaptive challenges, and that in addition to that, we have figured out, and it's not to say we've got the corner of the market on what does an adaptive support or learning process look like that follows it. But, you know, one of the main key things that we've learned is if you don't do the work first of understanding what is the real nature of the problem you're trying to solve, is it more adaptive or is it more technical, it's going to be very, very hard to actually succeed with it, because depending on what is the depth of the aspiration there, you need a very different kind of learning environment to actually do the learning. And so if you're really going for big goals that you know are challenges and stretches for you, then you need a kind of adaptive learning environment that helps to support that, and encouraging people to minimally, you know, to try to keep asking themselves, what am I really trying to go for here, or what is a group are we trying to go for here? Because our default mode, I think, is to fall into, let's plug into a course here, or let's read even a book, and mm-hmm. think that's going to be the answer, and it never is going to be an answer when we're trying to really solve bigger, more adaptive type challenges.
Well, could you please give our listeners again the title of your book and the URL of your website?
I'm happy to do that. The title of the book is Immunity to Change, How to Overcome It and Unlock the Potential in Yourself and Your Organization. And our website is www.mindsatwork.com.
Well, Dr. Leahy, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Psych Journey podcast.
Thank you so much, Deborah. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.